I haven't read a single book ever on like techniques, cues, or anything like that. I just watch people lift. At a certain point, you'll develop like kind of just like an eye and a brain for things if you watch enough weightlifting. Because when it's right, you know it's right. And then if you can figure that out, you can figure out when it's wrong. And then you can kind of be like, all right, what's the difference? Sometimes just watch your athletes move.
Brittany, it's my pleasure to have you for the second time on Evidence Strong Show. The first time I had you to discuss your first Worlds as a coach, and this episode just dropped today on YouTube. So if anyone is interested, please go and have a look. So for three people who have not seen the previous one, could you please briefly introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Brittany. I'm the head coach for Bare Barbell. I've been coaching weightlifting for, I think, almost 10 years, coach athletes of all levels. And so our first was about coaching at Worlds. That was pretty cool. So
awesome. And today we will do something different. First time on Evidence Strong Show, we will not go through questions. We will go through the videos of your athletes and your thought process. So how you observe and then how you go from there to coach the athletes to be better.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds good. I've got some videos of all different levels. So
that's amazing.
Okay. So this is Jen Fullhart. She's one of my remote athletes. So a lot of these athletes are remote. I definitely think that's a new thing for a lot of coaches, and learning how to coach remotely is very difficult, but I definitely think these videos will help. So the left video is what we're just going to talk about first. So this is kind of when I first started coaching her. She's been training for a couple years. She's a master's athlete who has qualified for AO finals and seniors, which is pretty cool. She is a 49 kilo lifter. She's a very long 49 kilo lifter. So that's something that in the US, we obviously have athletes of all different levers, and knowing how to coach those different lengths will help a lot. So looking at her and her start position, so you can see, I mean, nothing really looks glaringly wrong here at the beginning. One thing that is noticeable is kind of how long her torso is, which is definitely gonna make things a little more complicated possibly later on. So kind of watching her pull off the ground, I'll just kind of scroll through it slowly here. So I think, let me just play it. So anyway, so here's her start position. You can see she has a pretty long torso. Start kind of looks okay. So I'll just kind of scrub through the video. So we'll kind of just go through it slowly, and then I'll kind of talk about the things that I see. So the recovery. So right off the bat, something that I definitely see is her chest dropping. So as a coach, if you, in my opinion, one of the major issues is in that first pull is when you see that back angle change, what's going to happen? So if you look here, she probably thinks she's pretty balanced through her shoe. Feels like she is. So as she gets pulled forward, what's going to happen is all of her weight is going to shift to the front of her foot. Anytime there's that forward shift, there has to be a shift backwards. So if you're balanced in the middle, you shift forward, we'll say like 15 to 20 degrees, you're going to have an equal shift back that usually ends up shifting more. So you can see she's here, torso drops, she gets pulled forward. Then you can see she immediately shifts back onto her heels, leans back, keeps those legs super straight, almost kind of like an RDL into this position. Her torso's over pretty excessively. Then she almost has to like lean back pretty hard there to get under the bar. And if you look, she shifts back into her heels as she stands up. The first pull is definitely the most important. That's kind of when things get a little haywire. Also, any sort of shift in that balance, if it starts to shift, it's kind of just going to keep happening. So if you can really maintain your balance and center of mass in that first pull, everything else kind of just keeps moving correctly. So this was a recent video. Some of the stuff we worked on is we raised her hips. So people with longer torsos relative to their lower limbs, specifically like obviously their femur and their tibias, they almost always need a higher hip. Because with that long torso, if their hips are low, this is what's going to happen. The older video, to where their hips are going to come up because they're going to have to get their knees out of the way and they're going to have to shift. So by raising their hips up, you allow that torso angle to kind of get out of the way, for lack of anything better. And then they're able to push through their midfoot through the entire lift. So that was kind of the biggest thing. So one of the first things I always fix is the beginning. Usually if you fix the beginning, everything else kind of follows suit. So this is a more recent video. This is obviously also a little heavier as well. So the big thing I want you to kind of watch is that balance, but also her torso angle. So if you watch, we'll just kind of scrub through it like we did the other one. So kind of here. So, okay. So if you look at her hips are higher, like if you look at the start positions, you can also see that she can actually engage her back a little better to keep that bar closer. With her being lower with her hips, it would probably be a little bit harder to set her back. So if you see here, back angle stays the same, opens just a little, but it's not as much. But here you can definitely tell her weight's more forward, which comparatively you can see she just shifted back because she's so far forward that she's gonna have to be farther back. So as we get here, you can also see she's able to keep her knees bent better into contact because if you look, she like straight legs and then gets here. And then as she goes up, she's not using as much of her arms, also catches. So it's always a little higher, but she doesn't have that big dramatic shift back as she stands up. The key component is being able to maintain that balance, understanding it's gonna probably shift a little, but any extremes to where they're really far back on their heels, almost like she is over here on the left, is going to cause problems later on. Okay.
I think we need to go through. Okay, so you want different position now. How you force your athletes to change, because you know athletes like to do the same. So
yes, yeah, they do. So I do think it's important to explain why. Like, don't just, some athletes are okay with you just telling them, hey, do this because I said so. I think one of the biggest things with creating buy-in as a coach is putting athletes in position in which they feel more naturally athletic and it just moves better on its own. So with something like this, you know, I can tell her like, hey, I want you to raise your hips up and I want you to be able to maintain your back angle and push through your legs. She's probably going to feel that. That's probably going to feel better. So I think I've told people, I'm like, hey, like, I promise I'm not trying to make you worse. Like, I promise I'm not just saying something random to try to make you worse at weightlifting. And then usually people are like, okay, I'll try it. But I think the biggest thing to get athletes to listen to you and trust you is just to the first step is obviously understanding these things. And then the second step is just being like, hey, just try this and see how it feels. Also just explaining to them like, hey, you're just not maintaining your balance. Like, can you feel yourself shift onto your heels? Yes. Okay. Do you understand why that's probably not the best? Yes. Okay. So let's try this. But kind of like guiding them through that, I feel like helps a lot. Okay. So then Zoe is another athlete that's pretty similar in what we fixed, but is built different, which I think is good. Let's see. Compare. Okay, so Zoe is one of my college kids. She actually is a MIT grad. She goes to Harvard. She's definitely one of your typical overachiever athletes who was pretty good at wrestling in high school, did in college, but extremely athletic. But one of the things with Zoe that I feel like often happens with athletes is they at times almost move too fast. And so one of the questions I'll ask athletes when I feel like they're moving so quickly that they don't even feel positions, I'll ask them like, are you just trying to get this over with so you don't have to do it? Because it sounds so wild, but sometimes that's really the answer. Like, they just want to get it over with, so they just kind of like go. And so explaining to athletes like, no, I actually need you to feel things. Like, I need you to actually know where you are in space and in time so that we can make corrections. Because if athletes aren't able to process and think about what they're doing, helping them make corrections isn't possible. Like, you're like, hey, can you feel like your hips are too low? And they're like, no. And they're like, okay, well, raise your hips up. But if they don't even know where their hips are in the first place, they can't even raise them up. So that's pretty big. So we'll kind of go through this first video. So when she came to me, she had almost qualified for finals. I think she was pretty close. I hadn't got there yet. It was very strong, but definitely had some mechanical things going on. So Zoe actually has a short torso and pretty long limbs. So a little different than Jen. So we'll kind of just scrub through her first lift. So this is a clean. Okay, so one of the biggest things I probably see right off is this arm bend really kind of cheating the pull a little bit, and how she's like craning her neck back, really trying to like use her arm. So teaching athletes to learn how to relax their upper body. I don't know if relax is the right word, more just not use that as their prime mover as they're trying to do things. Definitely way a bigger, happens a lot more in cleans, I think just because the load is more. And so they're like, oh, I'll just bicep curl the weight. But it's not just that that's a problem, because you put all that strain in the front of the shoulder and the bicep, but biomechanically things just tend to break down. So you can see that arm bend. So she's kind of trying to like cheat the position. You can obviously see from the prior video, she's losing her back angle. So she's somewhat balanced in this start, and then she immediately gets pulled forward. And her compensation, instead of shifting back, is just to essentially try to bicep curl the weight. So she pulls hard with her biceps. You can see tends to like lean back just a little, but gets kind of sunk into her hips and it's difficult for her to stand up. Starting her off here, this is the newer video. So kind of what we did is taught her how to relax her arms, but also set her shoulders. So if you think of like a shoulder joint internally rotating her shoulder, that's also going to allow her to relax her arms and kind of flex her tricep through the pull, but really setting her lats to be able to keep the weight in her back and almost leave her arms long, but put her in a position to be able to push with her legs. Really, the key is you want to put an athlete in a position to where they can maintain their back angle, which is this. So this is her back angle. So if you watch, I pay attention to the back angle from the ground to the knee. So if we look at, we'll go to mid shin. So it's there. And then so what tends to happen sometimes is athletes will hit the same angle in the first and the third line, but the second line, if it doesn't match up on the first and the third one, that means they lost their balance somewhere through it or like their center. So then that means that shift is happening. So then if we look at this video, so here's our start. Let's see, mid shin. And then. So pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me that she is pretty much keeping her weight right here the entire time. So by doing that, it's essentially like efficiency leakage. Like the more efficient you can move, you're just going to have to use less energy and force to move more weight. And that's the whole sport. Like the whole sport is just being as efficient as you can. So you can use the most energy that will lead to the most weight, I guess. Whenever the shoulders pass the end of the barbell, that's where you're going to make contact. So that's just how it works. The only thing that could be weird, I guess, we can look at her other video here, not because she has that like bicep curl going on. So that's going to kind of cheat it. But realistically, especially in snatches, if you see the shoulders, wherever you see the shoulders go behind the bar, you're going to make contact. So watching on this side. So right there is kind of when, even still, honestly, in cleans, your shoulders don't really go behind the bar. I mean, kind of ever. I mean, if you see someone that stays over the bar really, really well, they are like, it's a very efficient pull. They never really get behind the bar. They essentially just stay in line with it the whole time. So if we see right there, she gets behind it a little, but then from there she could extend a little better, but regardless. So I mean, ideally right here she would just go straight up, because from here she pushes the ground away essentially by like driving the knee back and just going straight up. It's going to be a little more efficient, but regardless, her just learning how to keep her arms long put her in a way better position to actually drive with her legs, go straight up, and then as she comes down she stood right up. I mean, obviously this isn't like the same time frame, but if I remember right, this is actually a higher percentage of her max, but it's just so much more efficient and smooth. So it's just going to be easier. And like some people are like, oh, well, my jerk's really good, so it doesn't matter if my clean is bad. I'm like, well, hopefully you get to the point to where that's not the case anymore. And then the easier your clean can be, the jerk will be even easier.
So this is, again, you changed her setup and the things followed.
Yeah. So essentially everything we changed with her was having her like relax her arms, learn how to set her shoulders and keep the weight in her back, but putting her hips in a position, because you have to put athletes in a start position in which they can be in the best place. So an analogy I've used with some people is like sprinters that come out of blocks and track. They need to be in the right spot. And like if you had someone with like 1 foot hanging out of like the sprinter's blocks, they probably wouldn't do very well. So I think one of the most important aspects of actually being a coach is putting people in the right place in the beginning. So that's like where their feet are, how wide they are, if they're turned out, where their hips are, where their hands are on the bar, where their shoulders are. The fantastic thing though is it's a stationary thing to fix. So it's the hardest but the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if that makes sense. Like it's easy because you can just keep playing with it. It's not like the hip position where it's a dynamic thing.
Okay, so in practice, this is your remote athlete.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes.
You see the first lift, you think the start position could be improved on. Now how do you send the feedback, and then do you have like one-on-one in?
What I would do with her is so I could like do something like this where I do a voiceover of a video and explain it. Usually I try to make it simple at first, and I try to keep it as simple as possible. So I would probably just say, hey, I need you to, you know, roll your shoulders a little internal. I'll usually find a video or record myself doing it to show them, because it's for someone that doesn't understand anatomy, they're gonna have no idea what I'm saying. And then show them how to do it. And then I'll say, hey, I also want your hips up. I might say, I mean, her back isn't flat to the ground, but I might say like, I want your thighs parallel to the ground, or like, I want you to set up maybe with where your thighs would be parallel to the ground and then bring it up a little or something like that. But I try to find a reference point. Another really good reference point actually in start positions is people's knees. So how far their knees essentially are showing through their legs. So let's say here, right? So you can see there's more of Zoe's knees showing from the side. So I might just tell someone like, hey, tuck your knees back like an inch or two, because then they have that reference point. It's not, they're just like sitting there searching where to put their hips. And let's say I wanted her hips a little higher. I might just say, hey, your knees are sticking out like from the side with your arms 2 inches, do one. And really the only way to kind of do that is to bring the hips up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, normally that's a good guess. So like, and then if I'm working with someone in person, I can be like, okay, put your knees in your elbow pits. Like that could be like a start position, but that's a good like reference.
Sounds good.
Okay, so Tom is an athlete that came to me honestly really strong, but his prior coach definitely had him in some interesting positions. Definitely had him a little more narrow. So some of the things, like, we'll just go through the video. So if you look, here's his start position. So one of the things I see immediately from this is you can see how the bar is on his shins. That's probably definitely something that's pretty controversial in coaching weightlifting, is some coaches are like, just put the bar on your shins. I actually hate that cue so much, because unless an athlete has really short tibias, you can't have a proper first pull with the bar on your shins. Like, at least in my opinion, you can't, because the knees get in the way. And so what happens is people will have to shoot their hips up or shift back super hard onto your heels. So if you look here, I mean, if he wasn't holding that barbell, he would fall right on his butt. Like, nothing about this position is balanced. The only reason he's somewhat balanced is because all of his weight is back and the barbell's so far forward. So, I mean, that's what I see first off the ground, is number one, he's already so far behind the bar, but the bar's also so close that it's going to make it worse as he pulls. So as we get here, you can see how he tries to come out and around, but his weight's pretty far back. I'll just scrub through the rest of the video. Definitely you can see some instability in the catch. So, you know, like I said, so weight tends to look a little far back, bars on the hips or bars on the shins. And then you can see how he almost, like, he's making contact a little low and he's leaning back. Like, just watching this, something looks off of his hands. Like, his hands are not in the right place, because then what tends to happen here is you can see the hips just push the bar forward. It gets really far away from him. And then you can see this instability in the catch. So anytime someone's overhead position looks like this, a couple of things is going on. So there could be some sort of tightness or impingement through like the teres minor and major, the subscap, or maybe the supraspinatus, any of these muscles in the back, that's not allowing them to push up on the barbell. Another thing is like, there is a certain grip you're not going to be able to be at, because anatomically your body just won't support it. So that was kind of the thing with Tom, is he was really narrow. So because he was so narrow, he actually couldn't push up on the bar in this position. Like, it was physically impossible for him. So then it kind of led to more elbow issues, wrist issues, any of these tightness and issues in the back. I mean, your body does a great job compensating to a fault, where as a coach, if you don't put people in the right places, and you're having athletes lift in less than ideal like positions, if whatever compensatory mechanisms they're having, they're just going to get worse. So to me, like, as soon as I see this, the things I see are moving his hands out so he can naturally get into a better position in the hip without having to lean his back so far. Also, him having his hands wider is going to allow him just to get into a better start position. With a more narrow grip, people tend to have like kind of this lower hip position and more upright chest, kind of like almost like a clean start position. So kind of the first things I see are like, all right, we got to get the bar off his shins. We probably need to raise his hips up a little. He's kind of built like Jen, who has a long torso. So these long torsoed athletes, when you put their hips this low, you're going to cause issues through the rest of the pool with them trying to find those balance points. At this point, he had been with me for, his max snatch when we started was like 90, 95, but he would miss 70 kilos some days. And it hasn't been 2 years yet that he snatched 117 about a month ago. So made a lot of progress. Now, this is 110. I think at the time it was a PR. He's done a little more since then. So if you look, at his start positions, you can see there's already a big difference in where his hips are and just his positioning in general. So we'll just kind of scrub through and then I'll point out a few things that we worked on. So if we talk through the position, so it's funny, my brain immediately sees stuff that's still wrong. So we look here in his start, the bar is off his shins. That's just going to allow him to have that more vertical position. That is one thing that sometimes when you ask athletes to do it, it makes them a little uncomfortable because they feel like it's pulling them forward. And I'm like, no, like you are in control of the bar. You have to keep it tight, but you can't keep it so tight that like your shin and knee is going to get in the way. So in this first pull, you can see, so like I said, hips are, so you can see if we're talking. This is his angle. Obviously, it's not the exact same. It looks about the same, but it's not. You can see how the hips are higher.
Mm-hmm.
Or is off the shins as he leaves. Here, we can kind of look at the back angle we talked about. So we're here. Let's get to mid shin. Then we'll go to the top of the knee. So you can see he is opening a little, but regardless, you know, those three lines all look great. So here, one thing I will say he could do a little better is if he were to push through, there's different ways you can kind of get there, but essentially if he were to keep his knees forward a little longer, maybe his hips down a little longer, he'd be able to keep the bar tighter up his thigh. So that's one thing you kind of want as a coach, as an athlete who can keep the bar close so that they can meet the bar well. You can see right here is right before his heels leave the ground, but talking about that overhead position, which is what we talked about earlier, this looks a lot more natural. You can see he's in that great locked out position than here.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see this soft elbow. I mean, you can see also the hyperextension. It's way more of his back. I mean, here it's a little hyperextended, but not as I don't know, it would say painful. I mean, if you look at his shoulders, he's able to actually push up and lock out. So kind of the major things we did is hand positioning is something I usually fix first because people don't have to really even think about it. Like everything kind of happens as a byproduct of where you put the hands. So if I see someone's hands a little too narrow or too wide, or maybe I just have an idea that maybe they are, I'll just have them try it. One thing I will say as a coach is sometimes you might get someone and their hands are really off. Don't move them a lot. That's actually something I learned with Celia when I first started coaching her. Her hands were way too wide. I actually moved them in too much. But the thing about a too narrow grip is you don't normally realize it until the load's pretty heavy. So the problem was we didn't figure it out for a couple weeks that I'd moved them in too much. So make incremental changes with grip. It's my best advice for any coaches that need to make changes. So we moved his hands out, which allowed him to get into a better overhead position. We moved his hands out, fixed that overhead position, got the bar off his shins, and just put him in that better start position. So bringing the hips up, allowing him to be more balanced through that pull. Like I said, get that bar off his shins so he can just kind of lead with his chest. One thing I'll tell athletes sometimes is almost to think about, like, if you lead the movement with your chest, so if you think like almost like his chest is just coming straight up, it tends to facilitate a good first pull is kind of something that I'll tell people. You know, and the other thing too is when you do have athletes that maybe have been lifting in positions that don't really work for them, they're going to have some muscular imbalances that you're going to have to fix. So, you know, with him having his hips this low and his hands that narrow, he's probably going to be building different muscles and things that you probably, not to say you don't want, but aren't going to help you with like the correct positions, I guess. So sometimes making these changes, it's going to feel a lot better, but you're going to have to scale things down to almost rebuild up sometimes.
When you put a new athlete in and you get the videos with starting position and so on, do you fix it straight away or do you wait? How do you navigate that?
I fix things right away. I try to fix the big stuff, which is honestly the things we're talking about. Coaching weightlifting is hard, but it's not that complicated. Putting people in the right start position, just understanding like, oh, well, their hips are too low, so I'm just going to fix that. So I usually try to fix the big stuff first, which might be like where their hips go, where their hands go. I do try to keep it simple to where I'll just say one or two things. Another thing about coaching remotely is making sure you give enough positive feedback. I've kind of fallen into that hole as a coach before where I'm just like trying to fix things and trying to fix things. And people are like, am I even getting better? I'm like, no, you are. And they're like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. So knowing, like, it's like triaging. You want to fix the biggest problems first and then kind of the smaller things. Okay. So this is Veronica. She is a 55 kilo lifter. Very good. She's competed at senior nationals a few times. So maybe it's coming up on 3 years that we've been working together. So it's been a bit. She used to live in Denver, actually moved to San Antonio right around actually a year ago to train in-house so she could get better. You know, obviously remote coaching works great, but being able to train in-house with your coach is great. So she is a small human, not very big. So when I see this lift on the left, the first thing I see is her hands are way too wide. It's just like, at least the way my brain works when I just see that, I'm like, oh my gosh. Like her hands are way, way too wide. Other thing I can kind of see is her, when you see the knees kind of angled out like this, kind of pushed out like this, what tends to happen is people pull off the ground is the weight also rotates on the outside of their feet. And you don't want that. So you want an athlete to be able to keep their whole foot pushing down, which usually kind of means their knees staying in so they can push through the ground. So I'll play this. So like I said, those are the two things I see right off the bat. Also, you can see her shoulders are kind of a little pulled forward. And to me, when I see this, I can see she's probably not setting her back at all. So here, so we scrub through it. You see the overhead, you can see it's just too wide for her to be able to stabilize and push up under that bar. So as we're coming off the ground, I mean, this doesn't look terrible. To me, at least it looks a little narrow where she kind of doesn't have space for her like to be actually be able to drive through her legs. So because of her being narrow, she's just not going to be able to get into the best position, even with her hips keeping her heels down and driving here. But the biggest changes were, like I said, scooting her feet out and moving her hands in, which kind of tend to go hand in hand. Sometimes when people have excessively wide grips, they have really narrow feet. And sometimes when people have wide feet, they have like narrow hands. Like they're just like compensating. So this is a more recent video. If you look, we did lower her hips a little, actually. So if we were to look at, might be hard from this angle. I mean, and technically she maintains her torso angle. But anyway, okay, now let's look at this one. So moved her hands in and we widened her feet. So put her in a position that she was able to drive through her hips and through her legs, but put her in a more narrow position to where, I mean, if you look, you can definitely obviously tell more because she has a tank top in, but I mean, you can see her muscles like having tension and activating as she pulls the bar off the ground. So kind of scrub through this. But I mean, you can tell just from this overhead position, she's able to actually lock out, kind of what we were talking about with Tom, where except it's the opposite, where she was too wide and he was too narrow. But because he was too narrow, he couldn't lock out because just anatomically he couldn't push up. But she's too wide to lock out and push up. So if you're coaching and you see an athlete that like cannot or doesn't seem to be able to push up on a bar and a catch, their hands are probably in the wrong spot. I mean, obviously you should be able to tell if it's one extreme. Like I can't imagine seeing her and being like, oh yeah, it's too narrow. Like that would be weird. So that's kind of like a really telltale sign of that. But you can see how, if we watch her positioning, I mean, she does lose her back position a little there. It's also hard from this angle, but you can see how her knees aren't flaring like they were trying to over here. From there, she's able to just keep those hips internally rotated, push through, obviously have to rotate a little externally there, get back in, but be able to get into this power position here. So she's a little over more here because of that wide grip, but she's just going to be able to get that bar higher in the hip, keep her arms straight and extend up and be under. So that's kind of someone who definitely was too wide and kind of bringing them in. I mean, obviously females tend to have a more narrow grip than males. There obviously are some anomalies where you're going to find a female athlete that has really long arms. One thing I talk about with a lot of athletes, and this is kind of, I don't know if I'd say interesting. So this is Janelle. I've been coaching her for, I think, about 6 months. Came to me wanting to get to AO finals, kind of wanted to get to that next level. I'll go through it and then I'll talk about something I did with her that I've done with a lot of athletes that helps a lot of people. So Yes, this is an old video. So this is something that how someone initiates a pulse, a bottoms up start versus a top down start. So when someone has a top down start, which is kind of what she's doing, where you can say she comes from the top, she kind of pops her hips down a little bit and then pulls from here, you're originating or like starting the movement with a hinge, like a hinge mechanic. So it's kind of more thinking of like an RDL, or people tend to not live very efficiently, at least from my experience as a coach, with this start position or like way to get into start position. Unless some people are really athletic and they figure it out and it works and it's great, but for people that don't have, like I said, that high base to their one rep max, it almost always leads to inefficiency. Because the other thing is, when you're sitting here trying to take a bar off the ground and you're sitting here and you're like kind of popping your hips around and trying to get into that position, you can see how she's kind of yanks the bar off the ground. As the load gets heavier, you're probably gonna like do another little hip pop, you're probably gonna like wiggle around a little more. It's just not routine and not consistent. So actually, probably the biggest change I made with Janelle was making her start with a bottoms up start. Also made her ditch her belt with snatching, which I traditionally don't really like, especially with smaller athletes that don't have a lot of space in between their hips and their ribs, because you're just adding this level of like this thing that's super rigid that isn't going to allow you to kind of work around it. So I had her do a bottoms up start. So kind of starting with a more squat into the start rather than a hinge into the start. So this was last week, and this was like a huge PR. So you can see how she comes down, goes into her start. We'll kind of talk through kind of why I don't like it. So if you see here, kind of has that start down, you can see she just immediately pulls back. You can also see from what we talked about earlier, you can see how her elbows are pointed back. So she's definitely externally rotated through her shoulders. So she's pulling back on that bar. You can see right here, her weight's all in her heels. This would be a great RDL, honestly. And then from here, she just kind of throws her hips into the bar and hopes for the best. So, I mean, she just isn't balanced through that pull whatsoever. And some of that could be, it's like, I think at this point it was like a PR attempt for her. Lifting is very much routine-based and motor patterns. So if you have the same exact start pattern and motor patterns every time, you're going to get more consistent. So let's see here. So you see she comes down. Also, the cool thing about a bottoms up start is it gives you time to kind of like feel through the positions, because she can kind of get here and wait till she's ready and then push off the ground. So you can see here too, she's driving with her legs off the ground. So here you can see, I mean, literally she's perfectly balanced through her foot. She comes into the hip. Even here, you can see how she's balanced. Goes straight up. Obviously could extend a little more, but I mean, she's a pretty small human snatch. I think this was like 77 kilos. She's pretty pumped about it. So that's kind of something that if someone has a top-down start and it's working for them, I don't mess with it. I honestly don't really mess with stuff that doesn't cause people to miss. Like, I might not really love where someone's hips are in their start, but if it's working, just leave it alone. So yeah, so that's huge, is like that. I mean, if you can see, she maintains her torso angle. So with athletes that have that base that's far away from their one rep max, increasing efficiency is really important as a coach. And a good way to do that is having them have a more consistent start position. This is Margie. She's been lifting for a while. Started coaching her, I think maybe 2 years ago. I'm not sure. So one thing we were always struggling with was jerks. It was something that I just could never figure out her lockout and why her lockout just was soft. Because, you know, sometimes you tell people one thing and it doesn't click, and then it's kind of like you run out of things to say. So one of the things that actually really stuck, well, I'll show the jerk and then I'll explain it. So here's jerk over on the left. And these lifts, what's cool is these lifts were only like a week apart. This was when like we did a lift, I found the right correction and cue that clicked, and then the other video was a week later. So here's the jerk. So you can see just soft overhead. Her max is like in the high 90s. So with this only being 83, I'm like, man, like what is going on? Like, what can I figure out? Because part of it too is you can see as she catches, she drifts forward, which is also why she can't seem to like really push up on that barbell. So, you know, at this point, I've probably been coaching her for over a year, and I was kind of just like, I don't know what will click, because I tried to fix her dip drive mechanics and it's just like I couldn't figure it out. And so one of the great things about me being an athlete is, you know, I feel lifting 5 days a week. So one day I was lifting and I was thinking, and so I text her and I said, hey, do you feel like you keep tension on the barbell through the dip drive into the catch up your jerk? And she was like, no, I just like throw it overhead and hope for the best. And I was like, okay, yeah, well, I think that's part of our problem. So then I went and watched, you know, this lift, and I watched her hands and her elbows. I didn't watch anything else. So if you watch her, so we start up here, her elbows drop right there. As she's going to throw the bar off the ground, her elbows drop, which tells me she's already preparing to throw the bar right out front, because she's getting her elbows down and out of the way to essentially just push it right out front. So I was like, okay, what if I tell her to essentially, once this happens right here, to push actively into the bar, actively push her hands up, also like through her lats, everything pushing up against the bar and keeping that tension through the dip drive into the overhead. All right, well, I wonder what'll happen. So this is what happened. So not perfect, but if you look, if you watch the hands and the elbows, she maintains it way longer. She also doesn't drift forward as much, and she's able to stay in a stacked catch position with her torso that isn't this.
So you ask her to keep the tension on the bar when she, from the moment she sets up for the dip, then throughout the end, throughout the drive?
Yes. So I told her, I was like, I need you to actively be pushing up on that barbell through the dip and drive. And that's something I'd never told anybody. Like, I think I threw every single coaching cue I'd ever thought of at her. Nothing was clicking. And so I just one day was like, let's think about this. Because that's something I do when I lift. I think about actively pushing up against the bar through the entire dip drive. So
yep. I would expect that if you ask the athlete to push on the bar throughout the dip and then drive, it will possibly make them slower because they were more tensed. But that's not the case with this athlete.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way I kind of think about it when I lift is I think about really throwing the bar with my body and then keeping pushing up and then push under. So, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, well, if what you're saying isn't working, try something else.
Yeah, true.
So something I did not have to learn how to coach until I started coaching higher level athletes was bar oscillation and timing. I mean, if you don't have an athlete with enough weight on the bar, it doesn't really matter. So we'll watch this jerk on the left. So you see she gets set. So she kind of chases it out front. So this is from before when I wasn't coaching her. So something to pay attention to with the coach is how the bar moves. So if you just watch, I just pay attention to the end of the barbell because that's like the easiest thing to watch. So if you watch the end of the bar, she takes the breath and that thing starts moving. And here's the problem. If she doesn't time this dip just right, she's going to make it harder on herself because it's going to be like an opposing force into what she's doing. So she gets her breath. You can see right there, the bar is already about to change directions, and she's not even at the bottom of her dip. So let's see here. See how it like comes down on her? So because she's not dipping with the bar, essentially her dip just got 126 kilos heavier. So she's working against it effectively. So what tends to happen, you can see right there. See how it like oscillated against her? So now she's fighting that weight essentially in the bottom of this dip, and she's trying to change direction with 280 pounds. It's wobbling on her chest. So she's going to drop her elbows and shove it overhead and chase it across the platform. So this is when it's dangerous. When you have a 70 kilo female with, I don't know, 15 kilos under double body weight, putting this over her head with all that stress and everything sitting on her elbows. Also, the other thing about female athletes is a lot of them hyperextend their elbows just because anatomically, that's just how their elbows are built. So when you have prior gymnasts or people that have those anatomical elbows, it's even scarier because it's just like almost like an accident waiting to happen. Actually, when I started coaching her, I asked her, I said, when you do jerks, what do you think through like the timing and the dip of everything? She was like, I just kind of dip and hope it works out. I was like, okay, cool. Well, that's not it. So we did an exercise that I give athletes sometimes. It's called whippy boy jerks. So they will put collars inside the plates. So they'll put like the plastic clip collars. They'll put like one or two of those collars in there and then they'll put the plates. So it essentially artificially makes it whip at less weight. So watch this more recent jerk. This was a couple weeks ago when she was visiting. So she gets set. So she gets her breath. So one thing that we talked about too was when she takes this breath, that's really when she starts getting the bar oscillating. So she takes this big breath and you see how her like shoulder shrug gets the bar moving. So I was like, I need you to be able to take a breath without moving the barbell. So she had to learn how to like almost breathe a little more calmly, I guess. So if you look, she takes a breath. The bar's moving a little bit, but it's not really oscillating. So I'll scrub through it at a normal speed and then we'll talk about it. Takes a breath. So she initiates the jerk. There's the dip. But at no point can you see the bar like work against her. So as she dips, she takes the bar with her. So when she gets to the bottom of that dip, the bar is also at the bottom of its bend. So as she drives up, the bar is ready to go with her. And then essentially, she's just making it easy. It's like a big bendy stick, man, when you put that much weight on it. So when you dip at the proper speed, it'll go down and go right up with you.
So do you time how long and how deep the dip is?
No, because it kind of just depends on the athlete. Because some athletes have different depths of their dip. So I kind of just have them do whatever feels like natural and just kind of I work with what they're already doing. If it's a little too deep or it's off, then I might kind of mess with it, but probably not. Okay, so this is Kaylee. So Kaylee came to me maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, had competed at a decently high level at finals and nationals. And this is another one of those that definitely took me some time to kind of figure out. So kind of watch through. So here's 71 kilos on the left. I think this prime is around her max. So you can see it's pretty jarring in the catch. And that's something that like when I first saw her lifting, I was like, that can't be comfortable. Like that can't feel good. And it was of course accompanied with some hip and back pain and knee pain. So it's like, I mean, I guess if the athlete didn't have any issues or any pain and they were catching like this, maybe you wouldn't mess with, I don't know, I probably would. Just because it's like, to me, it's just like something waiting to happen. So when I was watching this, I was kind of like trying to figure out what was going on. So first of all, athlete's in pain. So I got to figure out why she's in pain. So if you look, she's so fast under the bar and the timing isn't matching her speed almost. So if you look, her knee, ankle, and hip, let's see. Right here at the bottom of her catch position. The problem is she hasn't caught the bar yet. So at this point, one of two things is going to happen. Well, the bar is going to crash no matter what. But either her shoulders or her knee, hip, ankle joint is going to have to absorb 71 kilos getting slam dunked onto them, essentially. So if you look, pretty jarring on the shoulders, but obviously it's all being absorbed through down here. So it was one of those things I was like, how do I figure this out? So first we had to get her out of pain. So we had to figure out what was going on. And then we had to do, obviously, take a little bit of time off doing snatches. We did some isolation stuff. So kind of isolating the knee joint, doing some isometrics. So like wall sits, iso split holds, and then kind of loading the hamstrings, loading the quads, and just kind of getting her pain free because that was the first thing. Then we did powers. And so what I did was like, okay, I want you to have your hands and your feet land at the same time. Like I need you to learn how to have your upper body and your lower body communicate through the catch of the lift. So that it's a smooth catch because I need your legs and your shoulders to be able to absorb the lift together. And so then I was like, okay, cool. Powers are good. And then as we started to go to fulls, it was kind of happening again. So what I actually told her, it's crazy that she does this at heavy loads, is she thinks about actually catching the bar high. She thinks about like meeting the bar. And somehow by thinking that, it's just like a normal lift. So, I mean, if you look, pulling mechanics and everything are the exact same because there's nothing wrong with them. And the thing is, I don't actually know biomechanically what she's doing. She might not be pushing as hard. She might not be pulling as hard. But the cue that clicked for her was to meet the bar higher. So if you look. So there's still a small little bit of that jostle into the catch. But you can see how when she meets the bar here, she has that time for her lower body to absorb. So the thing with someone like this, so normally I would say this would probably be happening with a less experienced athlete, maybe like a beginner. And so not that it's not a bad thing if it's a beginner, but they're probably not moving as much load. So the thing about someone like Haley is that this is over her body weight. And so you don't want someone lifting something that's over their body weight and having it slam onto them like that. So just being able to slow down the movement is going to allow it to be more like
smooth.
Like I said, that was kind of one of those, it was like a weird one to where it was kind of like, it was one of those things where I was watching it and I was like, okay, well, something's off and something's wrong. So with someone like that, like if you have an athlete who maybe when they do powers and then they go into fulls, their timing's off and it kind of crashes on them, something you can do is something called pause cleans, where you have someone essentially kind of do like a low power where they almost like catch it at parallel and then go down, and then you could just have them keep working farther down. Do you have any questions about that?
How long did it take? The whole
It took me a while to figure it out. I will say that. So I would say it probably took me like 6 months to figure it out. And then after that, it was pretty quick.
So would you not let your lifter lift full snatches for 6 months and do isometrics and then powers?
Maybe not that necessarily. I think honestly getting her pain free took a while because she had been doing this for so long, and so it was one of those things where it was like we just couldn't figure it out. And so when we finally did figure it out, we would kind of start progressing the numbers and progressing the loads, and then she would like catch one weird lift and then she'd be in pain again. And it, like I said, it was something I'd never really dealt with before, so it took me time to kind of figure out.
Would she still squat and clean? And was it a problem in the clean twos or just snatches?
No, it was just a problem in the snatches, but it got so bad with snatches that it actually didn't really allow us to, we would have to do partial range stuff. So we'd have to like pull off a block, we'd have to do block like squats to a box and stuff like that.
All right, the last one.
Yes,
lucky lasses.
Yeah. Okay, so one thing I think that's really important for coaches to realize is just because someone moves a certain way doesn't mean it can't be better. And so I think sometimes you as a coach might have an athlete that competes. Maybe they're a master's athlete and people are like, oh, they're just master's athletes. They can't have good mobility. They still can. Like you can still fix stuff with master's athletes. And so I think sometimes coaches just like, they just don't. And so they're just like, oh, well, what you're doing is fine. So one of the things with Michael is, he would catch all of his lifts really high. And the thing about that is the problem is like you eventually you're not gonna be able to pull it high enough, or you're not gonna be able to catch low enough. So something is gonna happen, and catching lower is easier than pulling higher. It just like, it just makes more sense to be able to get lower. So it's just like, I don't know. So we worked on, so I'll watch the video. So it's just a hip snatch. So this was his bottom position of his lifts. And so I was like, hey, like, it doesn't say power, like, do a full. This is when we first started. And he was like, no, I am. I'm like, okay, no, that's not a full. That's a power. And if you also look too, athletes that tend to have issues with their mobility in this, they tend to kind of like shove their head through and dive through a little excessively because they're trying to kind of like compensate like we talked about. But I mean, yeah, that's as low as he could go. So the thing is, it's hard to figure out what the issue is. So sometimes athletes are limited by their thoracic mobility. Sometimes they're limited by their hip mobility, being able to get externally rotated enough. Sometimes it's their ankles. Sometimes people just have really tight calves and they just like, it just causes like a cascading effect where maybe their calves are really tight because they work on their feet all day, or like women that wear heels all day, they're really tight calves usually. So figuring it out is difficult. So you kind of just, with him, I just kind of like threw everything in the kitchen sink at it. So we worked on thoracic mobility. We worked on hip mobility. We oftentimes, with athletes like this, they put a lot of strain and pressure on their patellar tendons because of catching forward all the time. So kind of worked on some like patellar tendon loading things, his calves and his ankles. So some stuff you can do like 90-90s or like the frog stretch are great for hips. For ankles, like a cheat code to helping people with their mobility in their lower half is to squat barefoot. So take away their lifters because the body will naturally just get in a lower position. Especially if you have somebody who's crunched on time, you're like, okay, well, cool. Just do your normal squats, but don't wear your shoes. It's going to suck because weightlifting shoes tend to help. Also looking at people's shoes. So he's wearing Romaleo 2s, which are fine. They don't have a really big heel, but athletes that have a huge heel, they're probably compensating for some mobility issues. So athletes that like maybe catch like this and they're already wearing a big heel, I'll switch them into a lower heeled shoe, have them wear something different. So then we will watch now. So this is like recent. So this is like years of working on things. So here, this is a this is a 50-year-old dude with who like owns his own business, has a kid, he's busy, and yeah, and like no big huge. And so this is another thing, getting an athlete, well, asking the athlete, hey, are you okay with the weight that you're lifting and how you're moving? Because sometimes people are, they're just like, yeah, I'll just do powers, it's fine. Okay, yeah, I mean, if you're cool with it, it's not usually why people hire coaches. They usually want to get better. So I was like, cool, because then you create buy-in too, because they have to take accountability. Like, hey, are you happy with this? No, you're not happy with this. Okay, do you understand saying you have to change things for it to be better? Also, yes. Okay, well, here we go. So you can just see, like, I mean, his hips are way more, like, the angle's more closed. His ankles, like, knees, also his overhead is better. You can see how right here he's, like, kind of internally rotated through the shoulders to cheat that, like, chest being dove through. Shoulders are more externally rotating. He's actually pushing up on the barbell. So if you have an athlete that doesn't catch full depth, the first step is figuring out why. What I've also found, too, is sometimes people have knee pain and they almost catch high as, like, a guarding mechanism because of the knee pain. Patellar tendonitis is super common in weightlifters. Figure out what's going on. So if it's patellar tendonitis, do some tendon loading protocol stuff. If it's their ankles, take their shoes away, make them squat barefoot. If it's their hips, give them some things for that. But, like, this isn't like a magical cue. This isn't magical anything. It's literally just being like, hey, we should fix these things. And then figuring out how to fix it and giving it time. I would say this, I don't know, probably took a year or two of just constant work and being patient.
How do you decide what to fix and what to let go? Apart from if it's a weird one, you discard it straight away. But how do you decide? Oh, maybe even if you see a few things, how do you decide what to fix first?
I think I will only fix things that I feel like if the weight increases, they'll miss. Like, ideally, you can fix everything. But I would say if I don't think it's going to cause them to miss, then I don't mess with it. Like, because the thing, some of it could be personal preference. Like, maybe I just feel like their feet are too wide in their star position. Maybe they feel great in it. Okay, whatever. But if I feel like that's what's causing them to miss, like, one time I had a youth athlete who was lifting and they were kind of shifting into one leg as they were pulling off the ground. And one of my athletes was like, hey, she's shifting into one of her legs. And I was like, okay, is she missing because of that? And they were like, no. And I'm like, then shut up. Like, because she was doing like three other things wrong, actually wrong. And I was like, stop. Like, because we're all built a little different. Like, people's legs are different. Like, if you actually did like a force plate testing, I'm sure very few people push the same amount on both legs. Like, it's probably just not gonna happen. So, and I think it's easy to overcoach and just be like, you need to fix this and this and this and this, when realistically you just want to increase efficiency. And that just looks like I said, moving more efficiently to move more weight and have to using less force. So I think, like, it is not gonna cause them to miss, I just leave it alone. And there's sometimes I start coaching someone, I'm like, man, there's like 10 things I want to fix, but I'm just going to focus on these three first and then we'll get to the rest.
And then you still go, okay, these are the three things that will cause them to miss.
Yes. Yeah. And then you just kind of like chip away.
With youth lifters, obviously they not only are learning a new sport and try to perform it at high level, but they also are having the bodies that are changing constantly.
Right.
Not only bodies, but also brain and, you know, this and all the other issues with hormones. Well, you coach, so you know.
Yes.
How do you go about coaching youth athletes and changing how they move as they change?
So that was hard because, like, it feels like sometimes they grew 3 inches overnight when they didn't, and you just finally realize. So I think just being patient with their bodies is probably the most important thing, and understanding that, like, as they grow, they're gonna be refiguring out their body too. I had a youth athlete tell me once that when he slept for more than, what did he tell me, like, he slept more than 10 hours, he felt like he actually grew taller. Like, he was like, yeah, when I sleep more than 10 hours, I grow. So we were like trying to do a meet and he was like, yeah, I'm making sure I don't sleep more than 10 hours so I don't get any taller. And I was like, what? And he was like, I'm trying to make sure I don't get taller. And I was like, no, just sleep. That's not real. I actually had a youth athlete who, when I started coaching her, my first session with her, she was setting up her hands and she had one hand like at a certain place and this hand was like an inch farther out. And I was like, what? Hey, your hands are uneven. And she was like, yeah, my old coach told me to do that because my arms are different lengths. And I was like, don't ever do that. No, put your hands in the same place. You're rest your body will figure things out eventually. So I think just being patient with their body is realizing, like, just because their arms get longer doesn't mean you have to move their hands out. Their torso might have got equally longer at the same speed. You know, being mindful of how their bodies feel. They're probably going to have growing pains. Their knees are going to ache. Their hips are going to ache. Their back might hurt. Like, just be patient with it. Know when to scale back. Also, knowing when they're in the middle of puberty that if they just want to go heavy one day, go for it. Cool. You're raging with testosterone right now and you want a PR today and you can, okay, let's do it. I have one of my youth athletes, Roman, who he just went through like this terror of just being like, hey, if I'm moving again, can I go heavier? But it was like every Friday for like a month. And I was like, sure, whatever. He ended up increasing his clean and jerk by like 15 kilos in like a month. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Go for it. Because that time will come to an end, obviously. So just being flexible.
Do you talk with your lifters about it? Is he aware that it will not continue forever?
Yeah, he is. I mean, I try not to like rain on his parade and tell him, but I'm just like, yeah, you want to do it? Let's go. And it's funny because kids hit puberty at different times, obviously, you know? So like two kids will be like pretty close in numbers and one will hit puberty and then the other one will come up and I'm like, yeah, go get him. That's fine. Chase him down. So yeah, I mean, boys obviously more so than girls. Like they hit puberty and you're just like, it's crazy.
All right, that was awesome. Do you have any parting thoughts? Maybe you have something you really believe in is helping you as a coach with analyzing and helping your athletes change the movement?
I think just paying attention to your athletes. I haven't read a single book ever on like techniques, cues, or anything like that. I just watch people lift. At a certain point, you'll develop like kind of just like an eye and a brain for things if you watch enough weightlifting. Because when it's right, you know it's right. And then if you can figure that out, you can figure out when it's wrong. And then you can kind of be like, all right, what's the difference? So I say just watch your athletes move. Like, don't worry so much about like who put a YouTube video up about this thing or this cue or whatever. Just watch a lot of snatches and clean and jerks.
So from the technical tips, you go from what is the setup position and how it resolves at the end of the lift, and that's where you start?
Yeah, I mean, I would say 80% of the coaching, maybe even 85% of the coaching that I do is the start position, is like the ground to knee. Because if you get that right, everything else kind of figures itself out most of the time.
All right, that's very encouraging. All right, where people can find you?
Instagram. My Instagram handle is slimthick64, or you could just find Bear Barbell, but it's B-E-X-A-R, just pronounced Bear, but... or a website, or if you're local to San Antonio, you can come find us at the gym.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you, Brittany, for today. Hope to see you again.
Yes, definitely. All right, have a good, well, I guess a good day, not a good night.
Thank you.
You're right. Bye.